Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. We're going to turn our attention to some things that have happened with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Earlier this month, the department eliminated from its guidelines recommended limits on the number of drinks Americans should consume. And we're going to talk about the meaning of the changes to the federal guidelines on alcohol with Maureen Bozzolacchi. Great to have her back. Maureen is director of the Division of Alcohol Policy, Prevention, and Research at the Wisconsin Alcohol Policy Project at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join the conversation. How much drinking of alcohol do you consider a safe amount, if any? Do you know the federal government has long recommended limits for alcohol consumption? Give us a call. I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. I'll say it again. And you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Maureen Bozzolacchi, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So the guidelines, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services issued the new guidelines, and what did they change?
So as you said in your intro, they eliminated the actual drink limits. And so they say consume less alcohol for better health. We agree with that. And then they point out some groups that should not drink alcohol, including pregnant women, people in recovery, those with medical conditions or taking certain medications. And then they also have for a family history of alcoholism, be mindful of consumption and associated addictive behaviors. And while those are good points, it's incomplete, to say the least, in our view. It completely ignores the risk of underage people drinking under the age of 21.
Yeah.
And those risks are well known. The research has, you know, I don't think anyone disagrees with that. alcohol can change brain development for our young people, and young people tend to binge drink, which is also problematic. But I think the biggest thing, and there's been a lot of media attention about this, is not really saying what less alcohol is.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. We live in Wisconsin.
Well, you know, as I was thinking about, I was talking to Jeff Robbins, our technical director and writer and producer as well, about this beforehand, and I was saying, I was even thinking about two drinks a day. If you know, if I'm talking to somebody and they say, well, I say, I'm a moderate drinker. I only drink 14 drinks a week. Or then do the math on that times 52 weeks, and what are you at, about 700, whatever it is. It's a huge amount of alcohol. What is a drink, by the way? What is considered a drink?
That is such a great question, because it's really been distorted in terms of what's often served in bars and restaurants, and also, you know, what you can buy. So a 12-ounce of regular beer with the ABV being about 5% is one serving. So a lot of times we go out and we have a pint, right? So it's a little bit more than one serving, and the alcohol content may be higher. It's 5 ounces of table wine. And so filling the glass all the way to the top, generally speaking, most glasses is going to be more than one serving. And then it's 1.5 fluid ounces of distilled spirits, you know, gin, rum, tequila, vodka, whiskey. And now we have those ready-to-drink cocktails, you know, and so it might be a small can. And I see a lot of labels saying there's two drinks in that can, right? So that's, again, another piece that people need to keep in mind, because you're right on the mark. Two drinks is a lot. And in doing the research, I found that the research committees, both last time we did dietary guidelines, which is every 5 years, and this time, really are looking at one drink or less for both men and women.
Yeah, there was no, I think the new guidelines don't make a distinction between men and women on this.
No, they don't. And the research is really compelling, because we've always said, you know, two for men. But we find that for men averaging two drinks a day, their risk of alcohol-related death goes from 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 25 with that second drink.
1 in 1,000 to 1 in 25.
Yeah. So if you drink one a week or one a day, so seven drinks per week, your risk of alcohol-related death is 1 in 1,000. If you drink two for men, it's 1 in 25.
Wow. So trying to think about this. During President Trump's first term, U.S. health officials rejected the advice of scientists to tighten the drinking recommendations. What was the reasoning on that?
Well, there's been a lot of controversy with past studies, making sure that you have researchers that don't have ties to the alcohol industry. And so there's been a number of different research studies in the past that have come under kind of a cloud because of people that were tied to the alcohol industry. So I think that's part of it, is that sometimes there's research that's out there, but if you don't know kind of who's doing it, it's hard to take a look at that. So my guess is it's something wound up between, unfortunately, politics and science instead of just looking at the science.
Well, and looking at the science, so we'll get into that in just a minute, but a reminder, Maureen Bozalaki is Director of the Division of Alcohol Policy Prevention and Research at the Wisconsin Alcohol Policy Project out of the Medical College of Wisconsin. It's great to have her with us. And I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts about the new guidelines or about alcohol. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at the new federal guidelines relating to alcohol with our guest Maureen Bozalaki, who is the director of the Division of Alcohol Policy and Prevention Research, works out of the Medical College of Wisconsin at the Wisconsin Alcohol Policy Project. Again, questions or comments, the number 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. We've been talking a bit about research, and I want to go into more detail on that, but George emailed, has there been any research into a possible connection between drinking and a sedentary lifestyle that you're aware of?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't know all of the research off the top of my head. But certainly those can be connected, as you know, as I understand. But I think the important point is, regardless of lifestyle, there's really no safe use of alcohol. It's a carcinogen. And so I think people have to take that in mind as they assess the risk that they're willing to take when they drink alcohol. So, and in Wisconsin, we tend to drink more than on average most states. And so that's a concern, because it has a lot of implications for our health and certainly for injury.
Yeah, yeah. Duane in Westfield, thank you for joining in. What's on your mind?
Oh, love the show, and you guys are always doing great. The thing is, I'm not to be honest with you, me personally, I'm not a drinker. I never, for ever since my teenage years until now, I just never really liked the taste of it. But I've had a lot of family and friends that have been, how can I say, affected by it. And a lot of times people, when the government gives out recommendations and stuff, most people usually just keep, they'll listen to it kind of like, yeah, 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 and then push it aside, and then they continue what they want to do. I think personally, not just that, because of people like me once in a while trying to keep an eye on people that get a little out of hand, I think sometimes the actual bartender should be a little bit more keeping an eye on certain things too, because it does affect everybody.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah. And so one of the things that a lot of communities look at is that question of overservice in bars and restaurants. And I think many, or if not most, of our bars and restaurants in the state are, aware and familiar of the signs of intoxication, and, you know, do their best to not overserve folks. But there are places where that happens, and you're exactly right. That is a problem. One of the things we're looking at is working with law enforcement when they are able to identify where somebody was overserved and they are pulled over because of an OWI. And then having a chat with that bar owner about what's happening, making sure that, you know, sometimes they don't know what happens, right? And so really doing some education about the harms of overservice. So I think that's really important. In order to get a license, in order to serve alcohol, it's an operator's license, folks have to take some training on responsible beverage service. So that is available. And of course, folks can repeat the class, if they wish. In some cases, I think public health and law enforcement offer some of those resources and opportunities more frequently, which can be really helpful just to remind folks about that really important responsibility.
And Steve had sent an email, this is going right along with what we've been talking about here, but wondering, do people drink more or less based on these guidelines, or how significant are the guidelines?
No, that's a great question. And I think what's happened in the last, probably 20 years is that there's been more of a recognition of the damage that alcohol can do to our health and, you know, in terms of increasing energy injury, but also our cancer risk, which has been really important. And so, I don't think the guidelines are posted everywhere where people are like, oh, I got to look at them, I think it's important for people to have a source to understand how much of a risk it is to be drinking, especially on a daily basis. And I think that's, one of the things that's really important. When the Surgeon General came out with the recommendation on a cancer warning for alcohol in January of 2025, I think that took some people in the public by surprise. They didn't realize the risk of cancer with drinking. And I think that's an important public education piece. So while I think it's important to have guidelines that are specific, I don't know that it's the end all be all. I think what needs to also happen are changes in policy and in our local environment. That is really important. You know, how many places can you buy and sell alcohol from is one question. And Wisconsin has, over 18,000 licenses to sell and serve alcohol in the state of Wisconsin. Very high rate compared to our population, especially compared to other states. And we don't institute alcohol age compliance checks to make sure that no one is selling to someone under 21 across the state. There are communities that do this very successfully, but it is not a statewide piece, and it's not also funded either by state or federal government to ensure that that is not happening, because we know there's a lot of risk-taking behavior in doing that as teens attempt to buy from a retailer, but also, again, that it can impact brain development of our adolescents.
John wonders in an email how lobbying by the alcohol industry itself might have led to the changes in the guidelines.
Thanks, John, for the question. I think that's something that we know there has been some lobbying, but we don't know the extent of that. And it's, you know, it's a challenging issue. On the one hand, I think it's important to understand and get the industry perspective on things. On the other hand, I think it's, you know, what the public needs and wants is to understand the science and the science without, you know, any financial or profit interest being involved in that. And so I think that's where hopefully we can help make sure people understand what the science shows.
Well, the announcement of the new guidelines, I think, were made by Dr. Hemet Oz, who is the head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, if I'm not mistaken. And he said that previous drink restrictions on alcohol were not based on scientific evidence. And I'm wondering how you would respond to that.
So as I mentioned, you know, for the last 10 years, there's been research showing that the recommendation should be one drink or less per day. And so if you think of, you know, seven drinks in a week, that is clearly not saying that you can have, you know, three on Friday and four on Saturday, right? It's really a per day, which I think is an important distinction. And in our work, we see that there's overwhelming research to show that alcohol, the more you drink, the more your risk. So it's dose specific. So if you have, you know, one or two drinks a week, like the Canadian guidelines, your risk is pretty low. If you are drinking on every day, your risk continues to rise. And if you drink more than one on every day, it's really significant. So I think that's the take-home message that people have to understand.
Yeah.
You know, what are you willing to risk?
Lily emailed to say she's worked in the bar industry for over 20 years and believes alcohol consumption is a much greater problem than most people recognize. After becoming alcohol-free herself, Lily sees more clearly the long-term negative effects. One of the most sinister effects of alcohol, she says, is that it prevents people from being able to see it's poisoning them. She believes if people overall would drink less, the world would be a better place. But what about her comment about prevents people from being able to see it's poisoning them?
Well, first of all, thank you for your insights. I feel like that's a really perceptive insight that it is hard, you know, to understand. We get used to it, right? It's a social norm, you know, that happens where we have, you know, a happy hour or a drink after work or, you know, whatever the thing is for you. And so it just seems normal to do that. But in a lot of other states, it's not as normal. And I think her comment about the risk is really true. The opioid crisis is frontline headlines. There's been a lot of funding put forward to deal with that. And it is a heartbreaking crisis for all of us. And we think that that is really important. But I want to mention that there's more than double the people who die from an alcohol-related cause every year than from opioids.
Yeah, Stan had emailed wondering about research comparing the health detriments of alcohol versus and beverages with THC.
That's a great question. I think there needs to be a lot more research on that. I have been participating in you know, webinars and presentations from folks who are studying that area. It is not my area of expertise, but I can tell you that there are a lot of risks in drinking hemp derived THC, and I know our legislature is looking at that issue. Those products are widely available across Wisconsin, and many bars are selling them as well. But I don't think we all understand the risk of those beverages as well as we need to.
Nancy in Ridgeland emailed to say her jaw dropped when she heard you say that 1 in 25 men are at risk of death from 2 servings of alcohol per day. Nancy wonders what those types of deaths are. Are they car accidents? Are they psychological problems that men drinking more than 2 drinks might have?
Yes. you know, there are 200 different injuries and diseases related to overconsumption of alcohol. So lifetime risk of developing cancer is one of those. You can be damaging your liver if you're drinking 2 to 3 drinks per day. And you can be more prone for injuries or becoming a victim of violence. So there's a number of things. There definitely are neurological pieces, as well as heart and other kinds of things. So it's from small to big, right? If you participate in Dry January, you might have experienced some weight loss. You might have clearer skin. You might have more energy and those kinds of things that you can see kind of in the short term. But then you can multiply that if you are, you know, drinking and drinking more than that in terms of the related alcohol-related death and injuries.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking about whether or not the federal guidelines should address the connection between alcohol and violence.
If they had asked my opinion, I would have definitely said yes. We know that when there are clusters of places that sell or serve alcohol, so like in neighborhoods where there's a high volume of bars and convenience stores, we do see higher levels of violence in that area. So that's definitely an issue. It's been well documented. And there are strategies that we can take to reduce that. And part of it is not having so many bars and restaurants and convenience stores in one area.
Paul and Toma, do you have a quick comment?
Yeah, I just want to and, you know, drinking and cocaine and skiing and living the Colorado high life was pretty much standard. Then I went back in the 90s, and my stepbrother, who had been there, who became a local, said, well, you're no longer going to smoke, and you're going to really no longer drink. And because of the lifestyle changes, the quality of skier, the health influences, all the good quality living that you had, no one was going to risk their ability to ski and the quality of life on alcohol. And it's dramatically different. And I don't know if any of your studies have shown the influences of the local people and how they can affect, you know, your abilities. I lost weight.
Yeah. So we're running out of time here. So I'll turn and thanks, Paul. Maureen, comment.
You know, especially for, you know, those doing a lot of outdoor activities or athletic related pieces, alcohol really is not part of a healthy diet. So either for those of us who are really active or anyone else, it is not part of a healthy diet. And I think that's the take-home message, that we'll have more energy and be able to make even better choices, you know, in terms of our lifestyle when we're not drinking so much.
Yeah. And on that note, Maureen, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it, and we'll get you back down the road and do this again. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Maureen Bozulaki is Director of the Division of Alcohol Policy, Prevention, and Research at the Wisconsin Alcohol Policy Project, and that's out of the Medical College of Wisconsin. Great to have her back. We'll get her again. And I want to thank you very much for listening. 3 great topics today. And This and all of our shows are a team effort. We've got Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, all part of our team, as is our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and again, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.